Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. A lot of you will be heading back to the office soon, if you're not there already, and that means there are changes ahead. Some of those changes have less to do with health and safety and more to do with how you interact with your coworkers. Are there some things you've said in the past you thought were harmless that need to be changed in some way? Well, tonight we're trying to keep you from making a trip to the Human Resources Department, virtual trips or worse. My guests are Dr. Vanessa Weaver, career advisor and CEO of Alignment Strategies, and Sean Talley, human resources expert. If you have comments or questions about this, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can also tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Weaver, Sean, hey, thank you both for joining this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Pleasure.
Sean, can you hear me?
How are you going, Harold? Good to see, good to hear from you again.
Absolutely. Okay. So here's the deal. Let's talk about this. Let's kind of work through this just a tad bit. Dr. Weaver, I know you. I'm starting trouble already.
You are?
Yeah, always. I mean, trouble is my middle name. There is a T in there somewhere. So, you know, as you know, we are heading back to work. And, you know, every culture is different. Every office culture is different. Some cultures are very buttoned down, others very relaxed. And, you know, an article in the Huffington Post recently had a list of the six things that actually would be psychologically damaging if you were to say at work. Now, I kind of question some of these things, and that's because we have a different culture here than most. This is a radio station. It is an entertainment venue, and this is perhaps less buttoned down than other places and more buttoned up than other places. But I'll share these with both of you, some of them, and I'll get your impact. Now, you know, so here's the first one. And ladies first here, if I can. Dr. Weaver.
Okay.
All right. Here's the first one that they say. Do not say, no offense, but, or no disrespect, but. Good or bad from your perspective?
Well, it's not good for sure.
Why is it not good?
Because that but is the real operative word here. It's like, no offense, but I'm going to tell you something that might be hurtful to you anyway.
Okay.
Or, no disrespect, but I'm going to say it anyway. And it might make you feel disrespectful, but I'm going to have a disclaimer on it so that it justifies me saying whatever I have to say. So that really is what makes it really, the article's the craziest things you've heard. But I won't say it's the craziest things, but it really does create a dynamic where it puts the person on defense because of what that rest of the conversation will say.
Sean, is she right?
She's absolutely right.
Oh.
And, especially for her Harold T. Trouble. for everyone else out there, it's also important to think about who is saying this in terms of where it's coming from. So obviously, when a person is saying no offense, really what they're attacking is the relationship. That person. And so in terms of if this comes from a supervisor or a peer or a subordinate, it's different. But if you're having a supervisor start off a conversation saying no offense, then what they're also saying is they're not really thinking about the relationship. They're not thinking about you and your development and core as a person. So again, maybe if that comes from a peer, no big deal. But if it's coming from a supervisor, it's a pretty big deal.
So, okay. So let me explain to you, no offense, Sean, but...
you see how your butt...
I know.
You put the in there, but...
Oh, God. Maharaj Butterum. I'll tell you, you know, my terribly incorrect, based on what you two are sharing with me, my perspective. I'm thinking, if I am going to offer you criticism, constructive or otherwise, that no offense or no disrespect prepares you for what's coming.
But it really doesn't.
It doesn't.
No, because so, if your intent is to prepare somebody for what's coming, then you don't want to shut them down and get them on the defensive before you share what it is.
So does it depend on what it is, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter, in my opinion.
I mean, starting the conversation with no offense, as she mentioned, it starts the person off. So you started off talking about, okay, well, what if it's criticism? And most people talk about the sandwich approach, right? You say something decent, then you say something constructive, and then you say something decent on the end. So you prepare somebody with words of affirmation, things that are positive. That's how you prepare to go in kind of with that negative, anything negative to say. But starting off with that no offense, it just creates a defensiveness amongst people, and they won't really hear what you have to say after that anyway.
So help me here. So what do I say again, as opposed to no respect, or depending on your culture, look, tea no shade, but let me say, you know, like I said, this is a thing about, you know, work culture, and in some ways subcultures within the work culture. So what do I say?
Well, I think the sandwich example, I think the sandwich example he said was really good, where you introduce the conversation or the feedback or the critique or whatever with a more positive statement. So it could be something like, I'm really committed to your success. And for that reason, I want to share with you some perspectives that would improve, or I think will enhance your performance or improve your relationships or whatever. And then you can give them whatever that feedback is. And then you can end it by saying, I know that might feel kind of hard, but I shared it with you because I'm really committed to either our relationship or to you. And I'm really interested in what you think and feel about what I just said.
Well, hold on now, Dr. Weaver. You just said, I know this may seem kind of hard, but I heard you slide that butt in. I heard that. Don't forget. I am a professional listener. I listen. Okay. They pay me to listen. I heard that. And,
okay. I have to improve myself. Mm-hmm. I'm also in process.
Right. Okay. I will allow that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about some psychologically damaging things that people say at work, perhaps that they should stop saying, things that you may have said or heard at work that you should no longer say when you come back to work. If you have a comment, if you have a question about something, give me a call. I just got a text, as a matter of fact, from Sharon. And Sharon says, how about, I have a problem to solve, or can you help me understand? Sean, perfect. What about that? Oh, really?
Yeah, that's perfect. And I think what we have to do is take a step back and really contextualize the world that we're returning to. Mm-hmm. So remember, you know, we've been, for the most part, out of the office for, you know, over a year. And in that year's time period, think about what we've gone through as a country, right, in terms of the civil rights activism, in terms of a very divisive, anxiety-ridden election period, as well as a pandemic that has been unprecedented. So,
and that post-election, Sean,
edge. We might be a little bit more sensitive to things that we normally wouldn't be. So we have to understand that the world of work is much different than it was even just a year ago.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, I like that. How about, you know, I I have a problem to solve. As long as the as long as you aren't the problem, then that could be problematic. without a doubt. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. One thing, Dr. Weaver, you said something before I jumped on your head about sliding that butt in there. What was it?
I don't remember.
Yeah, how did you start? I shut you down.
You shut me down.
Yes, I did. So now here's one that is really obvious. I don't have time for this. Sean, that one's easy.
Yeah, again, as I said, it always goes back to who's saying it, right? So if a supervisor is saying something like that, you know, a person who is supposed to be there for your success and your development, that might signal either A, you're working for the wrong person, or you might want to look for another job. Obviously, if a comment like that comes from a subordinate, you know, you might have an insubordination situation or a respect situation that you have to deal with. So like the other situation, it kind of depends on who it's coming from.
Okay. That one was easy. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the psychologically damaging things that people say at work that you've probably heard quite a bit, or may have even said yourself, that probably will not fly as we return to the office. If you have an example of something that you've said, then certainly give us a call. Let's check in with Emmanuel. Emmanuel, calling from Rockville. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for the conversation.
Sure.
I guess the question I had was, what if you're already engaged in the conversation and you act those, and you make those statements, and I really think it all boils down to is just that you're basically saying, look, I don't want to hurt your feelings about this. I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but you are already engaged in conversation. The person's aware of the, you know, the things that you're saying.
Yeah. Thanks for it's a good question. And what I tell people is always you can always rely on your relationship as well. So let's face it, you know, I could say something to Harold and I can apologize after, or I could say something because he's known me for years. And so sometimes what we have to remember is that words matter. Our words matter. Yes. And so instead of spending so much time kind of trying to fix what we've said, we should spend that time thinking before the words come out of our mouth.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the other piece that you mentioned, Sean, that I thought was important is that these relationships matter. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you have relationships with folks, it gives you a degree of freedom to kind of mess it up. You know, in our personal relationships with people we love, sometimes we say things that are not as sensitive or thoughtful. But because you have a relationship, you figure out how to work through that. And that's also true in the workplace. And what's challenging about that, to the point you made, Sean, our lives have changed. We've been disconnected from each other face to face for almost a year and a half, if not almost 2 years for some of us. And so that personal contact, those relationships that you cultivate and build on over time because of the proximity and the people and, you know, just these shared experiences have to be reshaped now or reestablished because, you know, they could be kind of thinned out somewhat because we've been disconnected.
Emmanuel, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about things you can say and things you cannot say at work, perhaps some things that you have said in the past that were psychologically damaging to your colleagues, your coworkers, that you should no longer say, things that could get you a visit down the long walk to human resources. Or worse, give me a call, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kim, calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Kim. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm so glad you're having this conversation. And me, as a person who has social anxiety. I guess I find that way of speaking very passive aggressive. And I live around and work with a bunch of people who speak that way normally. And it's frustrating because I'm always labeled as sensitive or, you know, maybe I'm overthinking it. And I just think that they should have worded it another way. Again, it, even though it sounds so nice and concerning, it comes off offensive to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So Kim, you're not oversensitive. You're not the issue isn't you. Now, it's important to understand that the American workplace right now is going through a reckoning. If you all remember, pretty much last summer, it was hard to find an organization that didn't put out some sort of statement about racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, all of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's another component to this, which is the recipient. And so if you're thinking about, think about marginalized groups, minorities, females, that sort of thing, that passive, what we called passive aggressive before, in many cases are now called our microaggressions. These are these subtle and indirect discriminatory things. And so by trying to contextualize the conversation or a comment saying, oh, well, you're just receiving it the wrong way, no, that's the reckoning that we're going through. And many organizations that I work with are literally, they have consultants coming in and doing kind of racial equity audits and whatnot. And these microaggressions, these passive-aggressive comments, these are the things that are coming under fire now. So, Kim, you're not the problem there.
Let me ask, though, is this always about race? Couldn't this, she didn't say anything about race.
Absolutely.
She didn't mention that.
In many cases, gender can be more common.
She didn't say anything about gender. I say that, and I've got to take a break, but I want her to stay on, and this is why I say she didn't say gender, she didn't say race, and I'll tell you exactly why I bring that up. Dawn from Capitol Heights, also stay on the line. You will be able to hear the program. Gonna take a break. We are talking about the psychologically damaging things that people have said at work that you should stop saying. What do you think about these things? And there could be some other things that we have not mentioned that we've not thought about that we want to talk about. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation will continue on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app. Don't forget to download it to your smartphone. You can hear the program in its entirety and, of course, on 98.3 FM. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are tonight trying to keep you from, come on, Doc, don't laugh. We are trying to keep you out of the Human Resources Office, and we're going to try to help you keep your job virtually or otherwise. There are some things that you probably said on the job that you didn't realize were psychologically damaging to your colleagues, to your coworkers, that you just can't say anymore, probably shouldn't say anymore. And we're going to try to help you get through it. Hold on one second, because I got to reintroduce you, Dr. Weaver.
Okay.
Just hold your fire.
Sitting tight.
That's right. Just sitting tight. Well, she's so excited. Haven't spoken to her since the beginning of the pandemic. I'm glad you got through. Dr. Vanessa Weaver is a career advisor and CEO of Alignment Strategies, and Sean Talley is a human resources expert. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Kim was saying, was it Kim? That's who we were talking to.
Yeah.
Kim was saying that some of the ways in which she was saying that there may have been some passive aggressive conversations, and and that her coworkers said that she may have been too sensitive. So, you know, Sean was saying that in some cases these things may have to do with race or gender. I don't disagree with what he is saying, but she didn't mention race or gender. But I'm saying it could be, but it also could not be. And my argument is it could be tone and tenor, and having to do with what the expectation is of how people communicate. Okay, Dr. Weaver, your thoughts about?
Well, I have even a different twist to it.
And, go ahead.
And it's twist that, it. You know, some organizations have some very polite, what we call nice speak.
Yes.
And they have ways of communicating, and this is how they communicate, you know, whether we like it or not. It's like, you know, there's a certain cadence to how they speak. It's a certain way that they phrase certain things, and it might be just the way they communicate. And I know often for people of color, for African Americans, we struggle to decode what they are saying to try to understand the intent.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah, okay.
But I didn't say it that way. That's what I said. And well, that's exactly what we're talking about.
And I am so glad that you and I are communicating clearly with each other.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But, you know, it's interesting. When I started my first career, I started at Procter & Gamble. And, you know, I was a black female. I was in the engineering division. And I would be engaged in these conversations with white males. And I didn't realize I was in a fight.
Right.
You know, because the way they would fight and, you know, jockey and stuff was not something I had grown up to. We were much more direct, and they were indirect.
They were so intellectually violent.
I don't know if I would say they were intellectual.
They were intellectual. Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying that because I don't feel they were intellectually violent, although that can happen. But I am saying that there are often ways that organizations speak. And you have to be able to translate that to know when you're in a fight, or that's just how they communicate.
And golly, Kim just brought up this thing. And let's just keep it flat-footed and plain-spoken, which is what I prefer. And this is what I'm talking about as it relates to culture. Mm-hmm. Often in black organizations, and this isn't, you know, this isn't across the board, but if you make a mistake, even in corporate organization, it could be a black-owned corporate organization, your boss can say to you, man, you messed up.
Yeah.
There is no misunderstanding
of that, right?
Of that you messed up. But what you're talking about, perhaps Procter & Gamble or some other, you know, non-minority culture, where they may say, well, it seems to us that there needs to be a reevaluation of the performance of this particular task. Well, right. The Kims of the world may immediately say, what
did she say? What does she mean?
What are you talking about? What a reevaluation of the performance of the... Did I mess up? Exactly.
No, the relationship that we talked about a little bit earlier, though, when you have that in place, then you can ask that question. You could say, you know, I really don't understand what you meant by what you just said. Can you clarify for me, what did you just mean? Or what did you just say?
Which brings me to my next point, Kim. Thank you so much for your phone call, which brings me to my next point. What Dr. Weaver is trying to say.
Mansplaining.
Thank you, Sean. That's a mansplaining comment.
I'm not letting
thank you
off
Sean.
The hook for that one.
Thank you. And he's due one for me, but thank you for doing that.
Is trying to say, but is that a mansplain? Because women could say it too. Okay, Sean. You know, help us with that one.
Don't help him,
it
Sean.
It is 100% a mansplain, and I know because I am a common, it's something I do a lot, but fortunately, I can tell you, I do it for other men too. So I'm just a loudmouth that talks too much. But
so is that mansplaining when a man explains for another man?
I don't know. People that have worked with me would call it Sean-splaining, but it can be all of the above. But again, it's really how, now it kind of goes to two different things. One, the first is, you know, in many organizations, you know, these groups that could be marginalized, in this case, mansplaining for a female, a woman needs to be in a position where she can show her worth and value and understanding. And when the mansplaining comes, it robs her of that opportunity to stand up, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very, very damaging. And in many, many social reports will say it's more damaging from the gender side than even the race side. And so this is a very big deal. And the second piece of it is, depending on whether it's a positive or negative thing, and this kind of links to what you were saying before, many people, whether it's a minority organization or what have you, so many people are not comfortable with having kind of these difficult conversations. So you're right. Sometimes it can be, something that's race or gender. Sometimes it's a communication style. But there are very few people in the world that are really fundamentally comfortable with having uncomfortable conversations with people. And that's part of that language that you do have to learn to decode.
Yeah.
And I think that also goes back to the relationship, because there are times when there are things that you can say to, I can have a relationship with Dr. I can have a Vanessa relationship with Dr. Weaver in her office that I can't have in the staff meeting in front of everyone. I have the Dr. Weaver relationship in the staff meeting, but a Vanessa relationship in her office after or before the staff meeting. And I think that those relationships can help, because that can help with clarification, interpretation, understanding, support, and the like. But what is the alternative to what X is trying to say, what Vanessa's trying to say, what Sean is trying to say? Is it just, don't say anything? I would not deign to explain something that somebody else is trying to say, unless that person asked me, Harold, can you translate what I just said, please? But otherwise, I'm not getting into that.
It's kind of joking and a little bit facetious, but there really is some accuracy to what you're saying there. So I think thematically, what we've established here is, you know, you got to think before you speak, you know, and the first thing you got to think about is, okay, what is my relationship with this person? Do I have the ability to be a little more real or direct or whatever? And if you don't have that relationship with the person, then you should be telling yourself, okay, let me put a little bit more effort into this thought, into this conversation, into this message that I'm trying to send to the person. And I think if you can kind of go with those steps, you're going to be in a much better place than if you don't. Mm.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dawn calling from Capitol Heights. Hey, Dawn, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. So I have a little bit of a situation. I'm a little bit older.
What's older?
It's my show now.
I'm going to ask what I want.
But I will say this. My Social Security statement is older than the majority of my coworkers and my boss.
Dawn, we don't know who you are. How old are you? It's just between you, me, and everybody else.
I'm only 49.
Oh, my goodness. It's all downhill from there. 49. I am clutching my pearls. The back of my hand is to my forehead.
But what
what I can say is this. The majority of my coworkers are under 32.
Okay. You're already in trouble. I can, based on what you're about to say, but go ahead.
Exactly. And not only are the majority of my coworkers under 32, because I work at a school, the principal is around that age.
Okay.
And so I am the manager. I'm the office manager, so I run everything. And if something, we're in the process of preparing for the school year to begin. If something slips through the cracks, she doesn't say a word to me. She says a word to the next person who says a word to the next person who says a word to the next person who sends me an email and says, did you do A, B, and C? But she's walked past me five times. Now, during our interview process, she looked in my face and said, really?
You just broke up. Say that last sentence again, please.
I'm sorry. During the interview process, she expressed to me that she gets very busy and she's very hustly and bustly and she does a lot of things at one time. And I looked her square in her face and I said, I just need you to tell me what it is that you want me to do. As my mama would say, you need to call a thing a thing. So whatever it is, that thing that needs to be handled, I need to know what it is. If you have a whole bunch of thoughts in your head and no directive, I become like this pillar up against the wall and you're just kind of beating me up because I didn't do anything because I don't know what it is I'm supposed to do. But I've come to the conclusion she's fearful of my directness. So I don't know how to handle that. I can be kind of sensitive to her needs. I mean, like the majority of those people have children under two and my oldest child is 32. So my patience with the whininess.
So let me, for Dawn, let me just let you know ahead of time that you, in your statement, have knocked down about three things on the list.
Okay.
You have knocked down the, I don't have time for this. You have knocked down the, you seem young for this. Okay. You have knocked down the, nobody else brought this up to me. Okay.
Well, this is the thing. I don't say those things.
Oh, then you don't have to, but you're feeling them, obviously.
No, let me say this. And 99% of the time, I don't present those things.
Okay.
But what happens is when something doesn't happen, I was like, oh, I didn't know. Can someone share with me where I missed it? If I ask for feedback, it must have slipped through the cracks, and then it happens again, and it happens again, and it happens again.
Okay.
What you do? What do you do in those situations?
Dr. Weaver.
I'm
sorry.
I'll jump in here and try to help you out.
Okay, Sean, go ahead. Sean, can we first start with nobody else brought this up to me? Because that is a thing where, that's a thing. If you're supposed to know and nobody told you, and I think that's valid.
Right.
If you're supposed to know and nobody told you, and that keeps happening,
it's valid to a degree and to a degree isn't. Because, again, it comes down to how you are receiving it. So if somebody gives you feedback, really what I would recommend is you focus on the nature of the feedback. Because, you know, I've managed for 20 years, and it's kind of irrelevant whether somebody told you or not. It's, okay, do you think it's something that should be done or not? Typically, what that statement conveys is a defensive, and there are many managers such as myself that I'm not getting on you if I'm bringing something to you. I'm not blaming at you. I just wanted to get done.
But are you talking about feedback or a task? I'm talking about
either.
A task. If you say, if I say, Sean, why didn't you do that? And you'd say, do what? And then you say to me,
so,
well, you didn't.
In this case, So to tie this back into what Dawn was saying, you know, this is what I call managing up. So if you've had more than one of these types of conversations where tasks that were you weren't really assigned to you, you find after the fact you're being held accountable, then I say what you got to do is you have to learn to manage up. Let's face it, there are some people that are bad managers and they don't communicate well. And so, you there?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm acknowledging. I apologize.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, so my point is just something simple like, you know what? Let's do a weekly one-on-one meeting. And let's have an agenda on that one-on-one meeting where I can clarify what your expectations is, you know, are what tasks that you wanted me for this week. You can give me any feedback for anything that's going on and any miscellaneous items. So that's that. I recommend that to a lot of employees because there are a lot of managers that do kind of manage helter-skelter. They're all over the place. And what you can do with these one-on-one meetings, you can do them every week, every other week. You know that you have that person nailed to the floor at that point in time to address whatever is on that agenda one-on-one to make sure that there is no miscommunication. Because in these cases, as with Harold's example, that's going to hurt you. And so you don't want to get into two or three of these situations where people feel or whatever, it doesn't matter who's right or wrong, if they feel that they've assign things to you and they didn't get done and you didn't know, then there's clearly a communication issue. It would be great if every organization took the onus to fix that. But if you're the one that's being hurt by it, I recommend you take the onus of making sure that that happens.
Okay. Now,
I'd just like to add to that.
Yeah, I was about to go ahead.
I dropped off, so I apologize. I came back right in the middle of this conversation. But to Sean's point, That is a great a piece of advice, and I would just build on that by saying once you've gotten clear with that in terms of the assignments or whatever, I would just reconfirm that in writing and send that back and say, you know, just to recap what we talked about, these are the tasks that I am responsible for this week, bam, 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 and this is the feedback that I got in terms of things that are working well or areas you want me to improve upon. And I would always also say this, if you find that there is a trend in terms of how you're being treated and you feel that there is some concern, you know, obviously you should raise that with your immediate supervisor. But if you don't have any satisfaction, then I think you go to your HR person and have a conversation and maybe have them intervene with you and your supervisor to work through that. But what I would strongly recommend you not do is not do or say anything. And a lot of times what I have experienced in our consultation with alignment strategies is that women, particularly women of color, black women, we have these experiences and we get really, really angry about it and we bottle it up, you know, or we go and tell other people about it. And we're not always as proactive as we'd like to feel that we are. So I would say not saying anything, not raising it, not looking, say, to a mentor for some advice how to deal with that. Is not the way you want to go because it'll come back on you.
So, Vanessa, what about this other issue where she has raised the issue that she is the, how shall I put this, the more seasoned member of the staff? Okay, whatever season you want to put
I
on it.
I missed that part. They told her that?
No, she says she is 49 and she says she is the oldest member of the staff and everyone else is 32 years old or younger. Mm-hmm. And that is problematic. Now, I would say it is problematic, but not for the reason that she's suggesting that it is. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it's problematic because just because you're older, then people may take, you know, offense at that because, well, you know.
Well, you know, what we find is that there are multiple generations in the workforce. I mean, it's not unusual for a workplace to have four different generations, from the millennial to the baby boomer to the folks that's just getting ready to walk out the door. And within those generations, we operate on different values and we have different ways of communicating. And so part of what the struggle is to try to be clear what is being conveyed. You know what I mean? And what is being heard versus assumed? Because a lot of times there's a lot of miscommunication involved. Now, we've had also some situations where we've had millennials who feel like they've been disrespected and are subject to a lot of slights around the millennial value set, which isn't this, they aren't this, they don't care about, they're not committed, all of the negatives around millennials. And then they will also, the millennials will say, that individuals who've been in the workforce for longer periods aren't willing to listen to them and open up and be willing to consider doing some things in different ways. And so I think, again, if there's this kind of generational issue that is going on in the workforce, then they need to sit down and talk about it and then try to resolve it in terms of how can we bring the best of what we have in terms of our different experiences and generations in the workforce. How can we bring that best together to win here?
Or maybe you could add, or maybe
what
simply.
What I would highlight on that, Harold, is that you're absolutely right, Dr. Weaver, and to expand on that, right now is a very, very critical time in the American workplace. I don't know. I don't think that I've seen a time over the last 20 to 30 years that has been more open to the concepts of diversity and inclusion than it is literally right now at this moment. So another strategy is to go, highlighting what you talked about in terms of the generations. That's 100% true, and it's also true in terms of race and genders and backgrounds and everything. And so, as I stated before, most organizations at this point have, at the very least, come up with a diversity and inclusion statement. But you can challenge any organization to go further. You can go to your supervisor or the principal or whomever and says, okay, what is this company's plan for inclusion here? What is this company's plan for bringing all these different types of people together so that we can work together? Now, you're going to get one of two, basically a range. Either it's going to be, oh, we have this XYZ program, and I've worked with companies that literally have 50-page documents and, you know, a lot that's going on. And then there's some that just wrote one statement and put it on their website, and then anywhere in between. But there's no reason why people that feel strongly about these things, you can be at the forefront of this. If your company, if your organization is not taking this seriously, make them take it seriously.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, that's easier said than done, Andrew Cuomo. Because I think that...
What did you mean by that?
And this is what I mean. That you can... You know, prior to this week's scandal with New York's governor, you could ask, you know, the governor of New York, you know, with a straight face as these allegations came up, and these would say, you know, that, you know, the state of New York, you know, the governor's office takes very seriously any form of or allegation of sexual harassment, blah blah blah. This is not to be tolerated. And then the AG comes out with this novella, 168-page report. And so, you know, I think that it's one thing, and we could have a completely different show about, you know, being literally at the forefront of changing the culture of a company where you work. That is risky. And particularly if you don't believe that the company is doing something that you believe that it should do. And so for you, so it's one thing
No, Harold, you're 100% right. It is 100% easier said than done, and I won't suggest otherwise. However, two things related to what you said. First is there's always some place you can go above. You know, so if you go to your supervisor and they're not listening, you know, you go to HR and they're not listening, you can get to the EEOC, you can get a lawyer, your Office of Human Rights externally. There's always some place higher that you can go that can force that group of people to respond beyond what you've said, you know, in terms of just a silly official statement. And like you said, being on the front lines, seriously, to the listeners of this show, you're 100% right, Harold. Being the change agent, being the face of activism, it's hard. But one of the ways that I've lived my life is I've thought that, you know, if you think about the people in the 60s, the civil rights movement, and you think about the individuals and all the hard work that they put in physically, I've always believed the onus is on us nowadays to give that same effort emotionally and mentally. So we have to be strong a different way. And sometimes that strength means standing up and saying, hey, these people marched and fought for these rights. And all I have to do is get up off my tail and make them be asserted. So you're right. it's definitely easier said than done, but I think this is the challenge of this generation.
And I would say, I'm sorry, what is that?
I totally agree with him on that.
And we lost Dawn, Dr. Weaver and Sean, but I was going to say that she has a very complex dynamic on the job where if you are, you know, the senior member of the staff, but not the boss.
Right.
And I would think that the prevailing wind would be, who is the boss? If your boss is 32 and the culture is for the culture in that office is led by the 32-year-olds, then, you know, I mean, as long as it is not illegal or morally deficient, then you have to be able to, you have to be flexible.
You're right.
That's kind of the way it is.
I mean, who has to be flexible?
Right. She would have to be flexible. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. yeah. And I agree with the thing that you said earlier about managing up. Yeah, if your boss says, why didn't you do the thing? And you say, you didn't tell me about the thing. And we can sit down and we can have that conversation about what you expect me to have, and you can put it in writing, but things happen.
Right.
And if your boss, who happens to be a bad manager and continually prevents you from doing what he or she wants you to do because they forget to tell you about the thing, that's not your problem.
Well, it's your problem and that it's impacting you. But I think
it's you. Yeah, but if somebody starts complaining to you, then you don't have an email.
But I tell you, the operative word in that situation, when you've given your boss the feedback or you try to have a conversation and they refuse or they revert back, then you have a conversation that it's gotten to the point that we need to escalate this.
Yeah, and I agree with that too.
That's the operative word, escalate.
Escalate. That's why I say it's no longer my problem. You keep asking me to do this thing that you keep forgetting to tell me about, because whatever these things are, you keep forgetting. But as I said, I just think that in I believe it was in Dawn's case, you may not like the change that is coming, and you're not doing things the way that you used to do them.
Harold, you make a great point there, especially when you were talking about flexibility. And one thing we know, as we were talking about, you know, generations, for example, you know, people in the, you know, as she said, the 32-year-old, that generation is much more collaborative in terms of their management style. It's not like the top-down approach that people in my generation and Dawn's generation, I'm in her generation, you know, we're used to a more top-down structure. So this could just be simply be, you know, flexibility. And you're right, maybe Dawn does need to think about, okay, maybe this manager is just more of a empowerment, you know, collaborative type manager, as opposed to here's your task, go do what I say and come back when it's done type. So your point's well made, Harold. Yeah.
Dr. Vanessa Weaver, Sean Talley, good to talk to you again. Thank you.
Good to speak with you too.
Yeah, and look, no trouble tonight, see? Not
have
much.
Have a great night, DMV.
This is a great show.
Thank you so much. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, August 5th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.